This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Center ice. Pretty much straight in. Basically his hometown. Stonehouse shoots. He scores! Brady Stonehouse gets one by Ben Gaudreau, and Stonehouse is 27th of the year. This one on the penalty shot makes it 4-2 Ottawa.
Welcome back to In the Box here on TSN 1200. Taking care of business. Barber Pools 3-for-3 on their weekend road trip. 6-5 win in overtime over Flint on Friday. 5-1 in Saginaw Saturday, and 4-3 in Sarnia yesterday. Brady Stonehouse scoring on the penalty shot for the win. And let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline and bring in the head coach of the Ottawa 67s, Dave Cameron. Dave, good morning. How are you today?
Well, pretty good, Graham, but please tell me Kenny Wall's at work today.
Of course he's not. Of course not.
Disappointed, you know, three day spa vacation in Saginaw, Flint, and got home, and now he's not at work today. I'm disappointed. I'm going to have to discuss that with Kenny.
Yeah, incredible stuff. Every time he calls a 67s game, he thinks he has to have the next day off, or even the day before, so that he could get there. I don't know what he's thinking.
I keep telling him I'd like to have that job he's got.
Call him into the office, Coach.
Yes.
Call him into the office.
Dave, before we kind of get into your whole weekend, what's it like for you, for your players, for penalty shots? Like, I remember growing up back in the day, the penalty shot was the most exciting play in hockey. I'd get super pumped up to see a penalty shot called. And now, I don't know if it's because of the shootout or maybe they're calling power plays more than awarding a penalty shot. But it's just not exciting for me anymore. It still is, but not on the same level. What's it like when you're witnessing that live in a game situation?
Well, I think you know, the shootout obviously makes it a lot more common occurrence, and therefore probably loses a little bit of a luster, because, like you said, it used to be a rare occurrence when one was called in the game, and you know, everybody was on the edge of their seat and that. And now it just seems to be ho hum. You know, we've seen this before, and you know, let's get it on. But it was a typical Stoney play. He went hard to the net. They had to haul him down or hook him, and it was a legitimate call. And then he went up, and at that point of the game, it was a seesaw affair. It was back and forth, and it was a huge goal for us. And Stoney looked cool as a cucumber in executing it.
As the game has changed, Dave, the shootout has become such a big part of the game. As a coach, how do you approach that? I mean, how much practice time do you actually devote to guys working on their moves? Or do they just enjoy doing that so much they kind of take it on their own, the end of practice, they have their own little things? Do you, like, specifically instruct them to practice the shootout?
No, because the shootout's, you know, it's a lot like the 3-on-3 in terms of that. It's just a rare occurrence, and it's more about creativity and that. And the players do it. You know, we'll have the odd time. We'll have a scoring game that resembles a shootout. But at the end of the day, you can't implement the pressure. You know, it's at stake when it's a game condition, and there's points on the line and things like that. But some guys. When you look at them in practice, you know, they're loosey-goosey, and you know, they're comfortable trying all kinds of stuff. So a lot of times you don't even see their genuine move. They're just looking to have some fun, which they should, and do it. So, but we basically, you know, every year we look at different guys, and then we use different guys and we experiment. And then after you get your bank of information, whether it's this year or over the course of the years, you play some hunches and keep your fingers crossed, because, the best player to shoot at your goalie.
Good point.
You would have been, I believe, the assistant coach on Paul McLean's staff when Dogovins did that move. What's going through your mind when you see that?
Well, I think a lot of times, as much as you say that, players, work on stuff and you know, get ready, prepare for shootouts, you know, to a degree, but so do goalies. And I think any time that you can throw something different at them, something they haven't seen before, you know, that whole element of surprise comes in. So, you know, I liked about that he had the confidence to do it, and then he took a little bit of heat for it, and I like the fact that Paul defended him and you know, said that no, that's what it's about. It's a good players. And you know, you look at some of the shootout goals, and you look at that one where Kucherov goes in and he fakes a deke and he lets the puck go and slides 5-hole. I mean, that's just, you know, real talented guys with the confidence to try something different. And sometimes it's like a slow pitch in baseball. It just fools the hitter.
I look at the standings in the league here now, and you guys have given up 121 goals against. I don't even know who's next. Hang on. London at 131.
Okay, yeah.
And they've played two games fewer. Are you a believer that defense is the foundation of a championship team?
Big time. And, you know, I look back at my experience, and you study all different sports and stuff like that, and there's very few champions, one where it's a run-and-gun type thing. And you know, defense is more hard work than anything. And like for example, if you take our road trip here, where we ended up playing, no disrespect to Saginaw Flip, but we ended up playing the best team in this road trip, Sarnia, a team that had loaded up and is a real powerhouse on the other side, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon after playing back to backs, and they were sitting there waiting for us, and they come off a 12-1 drubbing of where they just gave it to Sault Ste. Marie and stuff like that. So we asked their team, the coaches asked their team to, you know, dig in and play real solid defense for, you know, for the first 10 minutes. And, you know, just let Sarnia know that we're here and we're not going to go away. And we talked about how if we did that, it would rise us up a bit and would deflate them a little bit. And people, you know, a lot of people say, well, you should do that anyway, regardless. And, you know, that's true in terms of the strategy part of it. But the psychological part in the mindset of your team who's just played, you know, like I said, back-to-back games and a travel and then a 1 o'clock game the next day, it's easier said than done. But that's exactly what our team did. You know, they played real solid defense. They kept the game simple. You know, they got their one-minute penalties through the neutral zone. They managed the puck real well. And then we got Vinny got us a power play goal to get us the lead. And after that, it was, you know, we just stuck with it. And you know, we played really well. And I won't say that Cerny got some lucky goals, but they got some hops, some goals that were the pucks popping and going in. And when you're your third game in 2.5 days, very easy to say, you know, get deflated and just lose all your energy, momentum, and this team didn't. And I think it's a real sign that coaches preach defense all the time. I think it's a real sign our goals against and the way we played that game at Sarnia that our guys not only do it, they believe in it. And once your team believes in something and becomes part of their culture, you know, you take that next step on how good a team you are.
I think most people, when you think about playing defense, think about play in your own zone. But when you mentioned about the working part, like, to me, defense starts in the other team's zone as soon as you lose possession of the puck. When you talk about working, is that just like making sure that at least your third man is above the puck at that point and making sure that he works hard enough to be in that position?
Well, that's a big part of it too, right? Because that allows you, you know, some type of a tracking situation. And, you know, with today's game, with the way the defensemen jump, like a lot of teams today have sent both deep. So the other part of that equation is the first two guys on your forecheck. You know, a lot of times they're going to be in deep and they may occasionally get trapped. And so the responsibility on them is just to drop their head and you know, just it's like conditioning skate to get back to your own end through the middle of the ice, and that's the hard work. And then a lot of times when you get back there, you know, the next part of the sequence is you may have to block a shot. And, you know, after you've sprinted all the way down the ice, and that's a mindset. And I mean, you watch Tampa Bay last year in the Stanley Cup Finals where guys were blocking shots and then had to go down the dressing room to get treatment. I mean, that's a mindset of real good teams, and we have that.
We're joined by 67's head coach Dave Cameron. You go 3-3 this weekend, all three wins on the road. How tough is it for these young men to play three games in 3 days, and just how uplifting is that bus ride home, winning all three? You're already obviously a very good team, top of the league, but what can that kind of weekend do for your group?
Well, you look at to do that, you know, there has to be some things happen with your team in terms of the growth of your team, and you look at us. We've had real good goaltending all year, and we got it on this road trip again. And Mac, Colin McKenzie, he wasn't happy with his last game in Hamilton. He took it personally, but he put the work in, and he come back, and he was real solid in that. And that game at Saginaw, so it's about guys being able to rebound from off games, which everybody's going to have. And the other thing that's getting lost in our shuffle a little bit outside of our team and our room is the play of Thomas Sermon. And, you know, Thomas is a defenseman, and we asked Thomas to play forward for us as we were going through a stretch there where we had guys at the World Juniors and guys that were injured. And, you know, a lot of times when you ask a defenseman to go up there, they just kind of take the attitude, well, I'm going to go up, and it's only for a short period of time, and I'll get through it, and then I'll be back on D. But Thomas has gone up there. He's embraced it, and he's been one of our real, real consistent forecheckers and forwards. He's been as good a forward as we've had in the last last little stretch in terms of what he brings to the team. And he's an old-school guy, and, he's fearless. He likes the physicality. He's no trouble going to the net, and he scored a couple of goals. And Saginaw, the guys on the bench were all excited, hoping he'd get that third one and doing everything they could to get him. And the best thing I like about the old school, you know, for Sermon, other than the fact that he's fearless, is that his goal celebration, it's old school. He scores, and the two hands just go up above the head, like the way they used to do it in the 70s and 80s, and it's a flashback in time for me. But so you have those types of elements, going, and we have different young guys in another lineup that are embracing that role and accepting it, and it allows you depth on the road and a little bit of freshness when you play 3-3, and then, of course, winning is your emotion in that, and it certainly carries right over to the bus trip and the way home, and it'll carry over this week, too, and into our practices, so that's huge.
Those guys can really contribute to your room, eh? The energy in the room, like you said, guys rooting for them to get another goal. I mean, I've heard over my years covering team sports, maybe a guy that's not heralded or really recognized in the team can have such an impact inside the dressing room with his teammates rooting for him, and it just creates such a good energy for a team.
And especially Thomas, who's by nature is a quiet, laid back, personality, and he just gives you that big grin when you say something to him, and enjoys the game, loves the game, and like I said, one of the first thing I've always asked my teams when I come in as a new coach is the first thing I demand of them, and it's non-negotiable, is you got to be a good teammate. And Thomas embraces that as do all of our guys, but Thomas is as good at that as anybody.
Just wanted to ask, you're going to play Gatineau on Thursday coming up. You're going to host the Olympic. What's that like for you and the group being the team that plays another team within your area, but in a different league? You got one team obviously representing the Q and the other representing the OHL. Is there any intercity bragging rights or representing the league? Like anything extra on top of just being a regular game go into facing Gatineau and what it means to your group?
Yeah, I think it's both clubs are going to take the responsibility that they're representing their leagues. Both clubs are very are doing very well. They're deep. Gatineau's a well-coached team. You know, they're one of the top teams. We're one of the top teams. So you have that natural buzz. And then, of course, you have the across the river, you know, Ontario, Quebec. There's always some rivalry there with some emotion. But the thing I like about it is best is a couple things. Is one is that it's another opportunity for us, you know, to play another real good team. And, you know, we think we're a real good team. So now there's no better way to cement that than go out and play good teams and show people that you're a good team. So, you know, we're going to accept that. And then the other thing is that in the dog days of February, as a coach and coaching staff, we're always talking about ways to refresh these guys, to energize these guys, you know, with the emotion. And these games against Gatineau, that's automatic. That there's that emotion, there's that buzz. So, you know, we'll just have to make sure that we're prepared and know that it should be two real good games against two good teams. And I think both buildings will have a buzz about them. So it'll have a playoff-type atmosphere about it, which is what a great opportunity for both clubs to prepare for the pressure of the playoffs.
What a great point. Like, you want to expose, you know, a team is different every year, right? There's different players on your team. Coaches have learned different things. And you want to expose your team to different situations and see how they react. And I have to think that this is you make a great point there about typically what is a little bit of a dog days of the season type situation. And now you're going to have some emotion, if nothing else, from the fans to start with, because, you know, fans on both sides of the river are totally going to be into it. So what do you hope to learn from your team giving this a great opportunity to see them in this kind of situation?
Well, it's the same thing that, you know, we talk about every team we play, and obviously, you know, there's different levels of the teams you play. So we're just going to talk about you know, playing another top team, and it's just a chance to reinforce how we have to play the style that we have to play, and you know, we can draw on the Sarnia game, you know, to realize that we're going to play 60 minutes that. No matter who gets the lead, the other team's not going to go away. So it's that whole consistency thing in that. But probably my biggest challenge in this series is probably I'm going to have to up my wardrobe, because Louis's a real, real fancy dresser, you know, with his three-piece suit. So I'm going to have to get out and kind of do something to make sure I'm not taking a back seat to that, for sure.
Maybe
don't borrow anything from Kenny.
I was just going to say, when you call Kenny into the office for the talk, then maybe he could help you out a little bit there.
I'd like to do that. Just see the look of Louis's face.
I like the fact that you're looking at this rivalry and you're going to take it to the next level behind the bench too. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh no, it's great. It's like you relish playing, or I do now, and my team does too. We relish playing good teams, and you know, and it's not like there's any easy games. I mean, we respect every team that we play, but you know, we recognize that there's a different level required to beat certain teams, and you always strive for your team to be on top of its game every game. It's not going to be, you know, and the players know who they're playing and that. So again, it's we talk all the time about, if you're going to be a good team over the course of the season, it's about consistency. It's about knowing how you have to play and then coming in and playing that way.
Dave, always appreciate your time and insight. Good luck the rest of the way, and have a good rest of your day.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
There goes 67's head coach Dave Cameron. After a 3-3 perfect weekend on the road, guys are feeling good. Kenny's feeling good. He's still in bed, probably. He's going to have a meeting with Dave. Dave joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Take a break. We'll get back into, we'll dive into the web poll question for the first time. Is our quick little 2-minute discussion before the last break generated a bunch of texts. So we'll get into the web poll question on playoff format and your texts and much more still to come on the show today. We will be joined by Eric Macromella at noon, Ian Mendez at 12:40, Gord Wilson at 1 o'clock here on In the Box and TSN 1200. All right, welcome back to In the Box here on TSN 1200. Had to let that breathe.
Oh, yeah.
Big Red didn't even know. But Chris Stevenson, massive Mark Knopfler.
Oh, yeah.
Dire Straits fan.
Yeah. Thanks, Red. Intentional or not, highlight right there.
It's going in the notebook. Every time I'm producing a show you're on, CJ, get ready for some Dire Straits.
Nice. Fantastic. Thank you.
Knew as soon as I heard the first note, I'm like, is this for CJ? Because he's going to appreciate it.
That's good stuff.
Thanks to Dave Cameron for joining us, our first of four guests today. It'll be a busy rest of the show.
So, what a treat, eh?
Oh,
you get to
so
talk
good.
And pick his brain.
My old buddy.
Whenever, well, you get to do it every week pretty much. Whenever I'm on, I really look forward to the opportunity to talk just in generalities of team building and managing a team, but also, you know, the specifics of coaching. And I look at that number, I brought it up there, 121 goals against, tops in the league, to me is always one of the great indicators that I look at to see, one, how a team's coached, and two, what their chances are in the playoffs. Because if you've got a team farther down the standings, but have a great defensive record, and it comes to the playoffs, look out. Look out. So the fact that they can score the way they do and they're the number one team in the league in terms of goals given up, I'm looking forward to a long spring.
As soon as you started
Ottawa.
On the track of the goals against, I knew where you're going. That's obviously something you've been hitting on for a number of years, especially in terms of the Senators team. And projecting what they need to do to be better. But,
And they're trending in the right direction.
Yeah,
as far
I just
as
meant
the
historically,
go.
Like
yeah.
the last
like
the, 5 years. Or...
It's not always pretty, but there's no question that the numbers are for the Senators are moving in the right direction defensively. Probably not as fast as many of us would like, but, yeah, there's no question that the trend has been a positive one. They've narrowed the goal differential, so it's moving in a good direction with the Senators. Like I said, everybody would like to see it maybe go a little bit faster, but trending the right way. Arrow up, as we say.
And just back to Dave briefly. Love Mondays and Tuesdays, like we. Not anymore with Troy, but I looked forward to those every time I was on in the box. Just the insight that Dave and Troy provide, and just you learn something every time.
Right, and a lot of times for me, having an opportunity to talk to guys like that, it's not necessarily, you know, team specific. I like to talk sometimes a little bit more, sometimes very much in generalities and other times in very specific circumstances and the way that they would handle those circumstances. So yeah, we've been blessed to be able to have access to those kind of voices and that kind of insight.
And I just got lucky that Brady Stonehouse scored on a penalty shot. I got to bring up the Kasper Stogovins thing. As soon as I asked him, I'm like, he would have been here for sure, either assistant or head coaching. He was assistant then, but nice to get that his view of seeing that play out, because there was a lot of people loved it. People really didn't like it. He got a lot of heat. What did the assistant coach think of it?
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know how you reacted to it at the time. I was like,
I loved it.
If you're going to have a shootout in the NHL, you better be ready for anything that could come your way. And that was my attitude about it. Was imagine if he had scored.
That would be on the highlights. Yeah. Forever.
That would be on the highlight reels forever.
Forever, yeah.
So why not? Like, to me, the reward was going to be so much greater than the risk. Oh, he didn't score. Okay, well, that happens every shootout. Guys missed the net. To me, it was worth it.
Yeah, it was close, too.
It was close.
Let's go visit our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question of the day for the first time. We kind of dabbled in the conversation, but here's the question officially. What's the best playoff format? And the options are current format with wild cards, divisional only, conference 1-8, league 1-16, and web pool questions only allow for four options, and I think there only would have been four, but if Lever Sage was here today, his would have been 16 teams, and you pick your opponent. That's his thing. But how did you vote on this question? What would you like to see?
I like the current system. I like divisional. I like the divisional playoffs. I don't mind the wild card situation. Is that technically one of the options? Status quo?
Yeah, that's the first option.
The thing I would like to see, and again, this might go towards addressing the issue that we're seeing right now in terms of the TV ratings in the States and everything else. You've gone to divisional play. I don't think there's any question you need to encourage more rivalries. Now, rivalries are formed in the playoffs, right? That's where the root of rivalries take place. I think Ottawa still has a bit of a rivalry with Philadelphia. Now they've met in the playoffs for sure. But going back to the brawl game, that would be a big thing that would kind of, you know, planted the seeds for some of the rivalry between Ottawa and Philadelphia. It's not nearly on the scale as it would be for the Leafs, the Habs, the Sabres, and the Penguins, who I think are their four biggest rivals.
Mm-hmm. I asked this question in Reach for the Top not too long ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were on the show or not.
I think I was. But I think what the league needs to do to spice up the regular season is to have more games with your divisional rivals. I think that's the way to go. And it's an interesting conversation about how do you divide the games up, because it doesn't bother me one way or the other if every second year Connor McDavid's not going to come here to play. That doesn't bother me. But I would gladly give that up. You know, if you were just going to do a 1 year, Ottawa plays in Edmonton. The next year, Edmonton comes here, and you just play the teams in the other conference.
Which they did have before this kind of format. That's how it was.
Right. Like I said, everything old is new again. I wouldn't have an issue if they went back to you just play one game against the other conference and use all those 16 extra games, the majority of them in your division. And if you wanted to wait it that you played your biggest rivals even a couple more games, I'd be all for that. Now I think that's what spices up your regular season. To me, it was frustrating and disappointing this year that there have been such huge gaps between the games between, and so few of them in the games between Ottawa-Toronto and Ottawa-Montreal. And I look at it and, you know, the Leafs have been riding high for most of the season. But I think whenever they played the Senators, despite the disparity in the standings, whenever they play because of the rivalry, you have the expectation that, oh, this could be a good game. And the last one was Senators played great. By the same token, you could look at the standings and say, well, you know, Montreal and Ottawa are out of it. The Bell Center was jumping the other night. That was a great hockey game. Like, there was so much energy in the building. Seemed like the players fed off it. It was the game before the break.
Ask Brady and Tim if they fed off it.
It's the game before the break, and you're thinking, you know, some people speculating before the game, oh, both teams will be mailing it in. Nobody's going to try and block a shot. Nobody wants a sore foot when they're on the beach or taking their kids to Disney World or whatever. That was a good hockey game. And to me, it's a good hockey game because there's some spice between Montreal and Ottawa. So giving us a couple more of those games, Montreal and Ottawa and Toronto, they should be playing at least once a month. in the regular season.
Do you think it would tip the scales in terms of competitive balance, though, CJ? Because, for example, Major League Baseball this year is reducing divisional games from 76 to 52 to create what they call a more balanced schedule. So, because I think you get into it when you're playing more divisional games, like in the NFL, for example, you have maybe teams in the AFC South, no offense, Creech versus
it's okay, we're the Kings.
The NFC Beast, the AFC West. So I think maybe it would kind of muddy the waters a bit there, where it's like, are they really good, or are they just playing teams in a weak division more than maybe like a team in the Atlantic Division who has to play the Lightning and the Leafs every other week?
I guess my argument to that would be, I think baseball's going in this direction because they've expanded their playoffs so much that the playoffs have become almost like it's not a divisional thing anymore. It's almost like a league thing. So I get that. The NHL's playoffs are still divisional based with a couple of wild cards as kind of like a safety clause in case there was a couple of teams in the other division that were really, really good and had a lot more points. So I think as long as you're going to have divisional-based standings and divisional-based playoffs, that having the schedule tilted towards more divisional play, I don't have a problem with the competitive balance in that. So, again, it comes down to what are you trying to sell? And I think that the easiest thing for the National Hockey League to sell at this point is rivalries, whether it be, you know, the Rangers and the Islanders. They should be playing once a month. Pittsburgh and Washington should be playing once a month. Tampa and Florida should be playing once a month. Boston, Montreal should be playing once a month. Like, there's just so much of a gap, so much of a space in the schedule now where you're playing a series of games where I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to play Carolina, Florida, Tampa, and you got to go through 2 months of that before you get to another Leafs-Senators game. Same thing with the Habs.
I'm definitely fine with tweaking the schedule, but I voted conference 1-8. Part of it, I think, is because I grew up on that, and that's where I was peak fandom watching in the postseason. I do love that format. And I do think with the four divisions now, it makes 1-8 even better because you're not going to have that third division that has a team with fewer points than the sixth place team that they're going to be playing against in the first round and getting home ice. And if fourth and fifth are better than them. Like if you look at the standings this year in the Eastern Conference, the division winners, I have no problem giving the division winner the top two seeds because right now in the East, Boston, Carolina are 1-2. That's how it would be. In the West, you have 1-3 with Dallas, then Seattle for the Pacific, who are in third right now. But they're 2 points behind Winnipeg. So it's not like you're giving some team that's mediocre the second seed. The division winner is always going to have, they're going to be a good team.
Right.
So I like that. And then if you factor in the rivalries, Ottawa's biggest rivals, Buffalo, all of their playoffs matches came 1-8 format. Montreal, same thing. Toronto, same thing. Philadelphia, same thing. Pittsburgh is the only one where I think there's one playoff round that they played.
4 or 5.
And
I feel like there were 4 or 5.
Well, so in 2017, they would have played under this format.
Right.
But all those rivalries were built in the postseason and obviously geographic as well, but in the 1-8 format. So I don't think that if you go to 1-8, you're kissing the rivalry goodbye.
Right.
It's a still very realistic possibility you end up with that. So that's what I'm not against a wild, it wasn't an option on the pool, but I'm not against a play-in scenario.
Well, if you're, like you said, if you were doing your conference-based 1-8, then you can throw the wild card thing out the window, right? You wouldn't have to worry about that.
But you could, like the NBA does 1-8.
Yeah.
And they still have that play-in.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that. I know JR will mind. He's not going to be a fan of the results of this poll question. He likes the tight poll. Conference 1-8, 73% of the vote, followed by League 1-16 at 13%. I'm kind of surprised that's in second place, even though it's only 13%. But that's never going to happen. You can't have a series with San Jose playing New York back and forth right. in the first round of the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you could wind up with
too much travel.
Right, with either an Eastern team or a Western team having to go coast to coast. God knows how many times in the course of 2 months. So no, I don't think that's reasonable. And it's tough on the it winds up being tough on the broadcaster. And let's face it, TV runs the show. You think TV's gonna be happy if you have the Rangers playing the Kings? And Kings have home ice, so potentially four of the Rangers games could be on at 10:30 in New York outside of primetime. TV wags the dog here. That's, you know, as much as the idea of seeing a bunch of different matchups in the playoffs and everything, I'm against that. I want to see the same teams playing in the playoffs over and over. I want to see Tampa and Toronto play again this year. I want to see if Toronto gets by Tampa, I want to see them play Boston. Like, I want to see the same teams. There's history there. There's context to the rivalry. There's something to look forward to. There's fresh rivalries. You can see the Carolina playing the Kings. No thanks. But again, TV runs the deal. And I have to think that for the first couple of rounds, all of TV is going to want games between two opponents who are either in the same time zone or no more than a time zone apart, because they're going to want to be able to have those games on in prime time, or they're going to want to be able to have them on, particularly in the States, on Saturday afternoon. So, you know, maybe one of those games out of a Rangers-Kings matchup could be on a Saturday afternoon and the TV wouldn't be that big of an issue. 5 o'clock start or whatever. But I can't see that happening for so many different reasons now. The travel, you know, the lack of rivalries, and to me the biggest issue with that is the TV question, is that the Eastern team's gonna wind up having its games on at 10:30 at night. And the Western team's gonna have its games on at 4:30 in the afternoon. Non-starter. Not happening.
Just the amount of travel with, if that's a first, like Stanley Cup Finals, a little bit different, and you change the times to 8 p.m. or 9, you could even move it to 9 p.m. like the NBA does, but that much travel in the first round, that won't happen. What do you think about Lever Sage's idea? 1 versus 8, you pick your opponent, or 1 versus 16, you pick your opponent.
That would be awesome as well. But do you think there's a single general manager who's voting for that? Because the knee-jerk reaction is, we don't need to give the team that we're playing any more reason to hate us or want to beat us. And if we say that's the team that we want to play, that's exactly what you're doing. As fun as that would be, I can't see any GM voting for that.
All right, we'll take a break. Come back with a quick segment. We'll get to some of your texts on this topic. And then at noon, Eric Macromella is going to join us. And in the boxer on TSN 1200. Is it possible to hear this and not think of Reservoir Dogs?
Exactly. Red's nailing it. Jerry, big fan, Jerry Rafferty, Steelers Wheel, solo album. Solo album is so good. Yeah.
All I can picture city that one
city.
Scene.
City to City, I think, is the name of the solo album. Yes. The ear.
The ear comes off.
Yeah.
AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am final round carried over to today's CJ, just underway about an hour or so into that.
It's on behind you right now. Yeah. Beautiful sunny morning, although it looks like it's a little crisp.
Yeah, definitely crisp.
Out there at Pebble Beach.
Justin Rose is a two-stroke lead at the moment. How about Taylor Pendrith with a 64 yesterday, flying around 64. He's done at right now T5 minus 12. Where do you want to take this one? I know you said you had a couple of golf takes that you wanted to get into.
Yeah, well, just the, I like this tournament because you get the chance to see so many athletes and celebrities, and you get to see their swings and either agree or disagree with their posted handicap indexes, because there's a few guys that you see and you're like, oh, okay, But Jason Bateman was playing really well. I think they said he was an 8. And he looked like he was a legit 8. He made a couple of putts. So of course he's been big from Ozark and he's got the sizzling hot podcast now at this point. So it was interesting to see his swing. But the thing that caught my ear was the tournament was shortened. Obviously they're playing the pro-am part was shortened because of the weather situation. The high winds basically canceled play on Saturday. So they're finishing up now. But Aaron Rodgers wound up winning the AT&T Pro-Am, which is, if you're an amateur golfer like these guys are, you're on the celebrity tours and all that kind of stuff, winning the AT&T is massive. That's something you want to have on your resume. And Aaron Rodgers got that. Interesting, he was playing with Ben Silverman, who's a Canadian, who got in because of his win on the Korn Ferry Tour, and that was a story all in itself. He had a 3-shot lead, and he made 8 on the last hole at the Korn Ferry event, wound up in a playoff, and the guy that he was playing made double on the first playoff hole. So he wound up winning the Korn Ferry Tour event, gets into the AT&T, and winds up, he didn't make the cut himself. It's a 3-round cut at the AT&T. But he ended up, you know, winning the Pro-Am part of it with Aaron Rodgers. And I liked Josh Allen's chirp that there was going to have to be an asterisk beside it because it was only 54 holes. So I kind of enjoyed
that. I think a lot of people would probably agree with that, considering who won.
Yeah, considering who it was that won, exactly. So it's on behind you right now. Looks like a beautiful morning out on the Monterey Peninsula. So we'll let you know who wins when all is said and done there. And the other little golf thing, and this is a golf nerdy thing for sure, I don't know if you've been following this, but the Swilkin Bridge at St. Andrews.
Yes, I have. Well, I've been forced to follow it because I've seen a lot of people upset about it.
It's famous, right? It's whatever, 400 years old. It was originally a bridge used by like shepherds, like to cross the Swilkin Burn. And now it's become, you know, an iconic fixture of the 18th hole at St. Andrews. And I'm sure even casual golf fans have seen the pictures of all the game's greats when they play their last round at St. Andrews. They pause on the Swilkin Bridge and have their picture taken while they're waving. So I guess that the St. Andrews Links Trust, which oversees all of the courses in addition to, there's what, 5 or 6 other courses in addition to St. Andrews in the St. Andrews area. They've put in this, how would you describe it? It's almost kind of like this big stone patio, a circular stone patio on the T side of the Swilkin Burn. Because I guess the turf was getting, because of all the traffic, right? Yeah. All the traffic funnels down into this one little area, and what, the Swilkin Bridge is like 4 feet wide. So all the traffic funnels to that little spot. The turf takes a beating. So to relieve some of the stress from the turf in that area, they've put in this massive circular, almost like patio, leading up to the bridge. And all kinds of people have just lost their minds over this.
Totally. What's your thought? What's your feeling?
I understand it. I get the whole the concerns of the turf and everything else, but it's a bit much to take in. It's a bit much to take in.
Does it ruin the iconic photo? Like if you were to go there?
No, I don't think so, because now I think people will probably be standing on that circular patio thing to take the picture, because that's the other thing, right? Is everybody loves to have their picture taken on the Swilkin Bridge as they're finishing their round. But what I only bring it up because if you're at all interested in this, Twitter's just been filled with a bunch of really amusing memes and everything else, because my favorite, I think, was probably the one where somebody superimposed a whole backyard patio thing on it with like a woman sitting at a patio table and a big green egg beside it with somebody cooking on the big green egg. It does look like a patio in somebody's backyard. So yeah, anybody that's a little bit interested in golf or whatever, you can have yourself a chuckle, or you can be completely outraged, but whatever way you want to take it. But that's been a huge thing on Twitter, has been the approach patio to the Swilkin Bridge.
All right. 2 hours in the book, CJ, two to go. And we'll kick it off with Eric Macromala next on In the Box and TSN 1200.